Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 metre peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Grigor Atanasian, on assignment in Armenia. Imagine a nation uniting around one project, one idea, one cause, and spending 30 years fighting for it. A project that defines its policy and education and becomes the single most important question on which politicians and even celebrities are judged. What happens then when this epic project suddenly ends in a complete and total defeat? I travel to the South Caucasus, a region with a rich and bloody history, to try and answer this question.
So there was this bar in Artsakh. It was called Bardak, which translates to mess. And it was a messy place in a way that there were artifacts from different parts of Artsakh and things that don't go together. For example, some posters of rock icons and an old telephone and flags of all the countries on this planet Earth. Bardak was the first pub, actually, that opened in Artsakh because it's a bit conservative space and very fast became the favorite spot for all the young people and all the foreigners who came to visit Artsakh.
I'm Azat Adamyan. I was born in 1990. And in 2016 I opened Bardak. At first, it wasn't meant to be a pub. It was just a space where I hung out with my friends. Then I borrowed my father's cassette player and a few things to make the place cozier. That's how it all started.
This is the story of a pub, its regulars and the country it opened in, Artsakh. You may never have heard of Artsakh because it doesn't exist. And even when it did, it wasn't recognized by a single member of the United Nations. But it had a national anthem, a government, an army, a university, a dance company, and a football team that played in the International Championship of Unrecognized Nations, beating Padania in Italy 2-0 in its greatest triumph in 2019. And its 100,000 people thought it was paradise on earth.
People who was live in Artsakh, when you talk with that people, you can feel very powerful energy. I don't know. That place was some magical place.
Wherever you go, you see mountains. And for me, the mountains in Artsakh, they are the most beautiful mountains on the planet Earth. So free and so inspiring.
Mountains are a clue. Artsakh is internationally known as Nagorno-Karabakh. Nagorno is Russian for mountainous, and mountainous Karabakh is a small patch of territory in a corner of what was once the Soviet Union, between the Black Sea and the Caspian, just north of Turkey and Iran. It is officially part of the Republic of Azerbaijan, and its name is Azerbaijani, meaning Black Garden. But most people there were ethnic Armenians. Both nations see Karabakh as a cradle of their civilization. It has ancient monasteries where Armenian Christian faith and culture were preserved for 16 centuries. And the ancient citadel of Shusha was famous for its traditional Azerbaijani music, Mugam, for its ornamental mosques, and the breathtaking Jidir plain, where Azerbaijani princes or khans held horse racing competitions.
Oh,
For 30 years after the collapse of the Soviet Union, Azerbaijan and Armenia fought over the enclave, and local Armenians established it as their own Republic of Artsakh, hoping eventually to unite with Armenia itself. Until last September. That's when Azerbaijan launched a military operation to retake its territory. Then, almost every single Armenian in Karabakh got in a car and left, in just 10 days. It was one of the most extraordinary migrations in modern times.
It was like tens of thousands of cars on one single narrow road trying to escape. Every car is filled with people. It's just you see sorrow everywhere.
The extinction of Artsakh, Karabakh, was only briefly in the headlines. But for its people and for Armenia, it was a catastrophe of epic proportions, the collapse of a historic national project that had cost thousands of lives. I am Grigor Atanasian, and in this edition of Assignment here on the BBC World Service, I am in Armenia to try to understand how the country and the refugees themselves are coping with that unimaginable blow. Refugees like Azat Adamyan, owner of one of the world's most improbable pubs, and his friend, also my friend, Nina Shahverdian.
Azat is very daring, really brave and interesting guy. He has bright blue eyes, which is not natural for our region. He's very strongly built. One thing that is very special about him is that he can connect people with each other. Everybody loved him because he talked a lot.
Azat grew up in Karabakh after the first war between Armenia and Azerbaijan that ended in 1994. That established a de facto independent state of ethnic Armenians in Azerbaijan. But Azerbaijan refused to accept it, and years of negotiations with Armenia led nowhere. In 2016, when Azat was 26, there was another war. He volunteered to fight and found himself in a trench, gazing up at the sky.
Our position was shelled. We thought we would not get out alive. And I promised a friend that if we survived, I would open something, so people could see that life goes on.
What he opened was Bardak. Soon it became famous for its quirkiness.
People started bringing objects, until every centimeter of the walls had something on it. And families were made there. People met, started dating, and the next thing you know, there was a wedding.
Meanwhile, Nina Shahverdian was teaching English in remote mountain villages, an idyllic life, she says.
They would send me home with like dozens of eggs, cheese, milk, bottles and bottles of wine, which they made, and they would teach me how to do that.
But the idyll couldn't last. In the 1990s, when Armenia was strong, its forces had taken control not only of Karabakh, but also occupied large tracts of territory around it, where most people were ethnic Azerbaijanis. 500,000 were driven from their homes. But in 2020, the tables were turned. Azerbaijan retook those territories and parts of Karabakh after years of using its huge oil wealth to rebuild its military. Then, in December 2022, it blockaded what was left of Artsakh in an attempt to force Armenians there to abandon their unrecognized state.
For the last 2 months, we ran out of all the flour that we had in the country and no fuel to get vegetables and fruits from the villages to the city. We were deprived of gas and electricity and fuel. So everybody, even on their balconies, they were trying to grow something. But there were people who were just fainting when they were standing in the lines for bread. The hospitals were full because of malnutrition.
Then, after 9 months of blockade, last September, Azerbaijani bombs started to fall on Karabakh. This time, the state of Armenia, which supported the rebel republic in previous wars, did not intervene, realizing it would be a hopeless fight. Azerbaijan told the Armenians that they could stay and accept citizenship. But decades of conflict made this unimaginable, and the 9 months of blockade drove the point home. And so, when Azerbaijan suddenly reopened the only road linking Karabakh with Armenia,
people were so scared that the roads are gonna close again that they started to flee immediately.
Nina, her parents and brother said goodbye to their house, got into a car with a cousin and left, along with 100,000 other people who were losing everything.
And then there was Azerbaijan making them open their cars, check them and stuff. And because there was almost no connection to each other, no electricity, we didn't know what really was happening on the road. And 64 people died on the road because they just couldn't live through 30, 40 hours of road, which used to be just 2 hours. People died of heart attacks. People died because they were just too old to live through that pain. Children were crying. People were drinking heavily because they wanted to cut off from reality. It was very easy to start the conflict there because everybody is so, so angry. We stood at one place for 6 hours. Sometimes we moved 1 kilometer in 1 hour. For us, it took more than 30 hours on that road to finally reach to the first Armenian village.
I'll wait for the coffee. Now, 6 members of the Shakhvedyan family are sharing a 2-bedroom flat in the Armenian capital, Yerevan. It's light and airy, much better conditions than many Karabakh refugees are now enduring.
There are dried apricots on the table and all kinds of pastries and biscuits.
I have known Nina for years. Her father, Sergei, was one of the initial participants of the movement that first campaigned for Karabakh to become part of Armenia when the Soviet Union was falling apart 35 years ago. They had a grand stone house there.
It had big arched windows, and our neighbor's mulberry tree was very big, and the branches of the mulberry tree were falling into my balcony, so I would go to the balcony and eat the mulberry from our neighbor's tree.
A life that's over forever. But displacement is the history of Armenians. For them, this is just one more tragedy.
As we were leaving, in my head I had this image of 1915.
That's Nina's mother, Liana. She is talking about the killing of 1.5 million Armenians in Turkey in 1915 that many countries recognize as genocide. She thinks the world didn't care then, and it doesn't care now. In her view, it has sided with authoritarian but oil-rich Muslim Azerbaijan against democratic Christian Armenia.
We've got nothing but hatred and contempt for all those so-called democratic, liberal countries. They're so cruel and unfair. They have let this little Christian world of ours be wiped out.
There is evidence of Armenian churches being desecrated, like Azerbaijani mosques were under Armenian rule. Azerbaijan is now knocking down former Armenian houses and rehousing returning Azerbaijanis in new homes. Liana doesn't know what's happened to their house, but she did something quite surprising, out of pride perhaps.
I left the table laid so beautifully with a white tablecloth. And that day our rose bloomed, our beautiful rose.
I think it's too much for her. She's leaving. Perhaps she doesn't want us to see her crying.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Grigor Atanasian, on assignment in Armenia.
Tarbiyat? Uh-huh. It's the best Armenian craft beer was just delivered.
Welcome. What do you want to drink?
But Azad has bounced back. He's behind the bar at a new version of Bardak in Armenia's capital.
It's called Bardak Special. Our special cocktail.
The new Bardak is much more spacious, less cozy. But there are still dozens and dozens of seemingly unrelated objects on the walls.
We are doing everything we can to have the same spirit here that we had back in Stepanakert.
Here is the table football that was crowdfunded with the assistance of the friends of the pub.
Bardak has become a meeting place for those displaced from Karabakh. Here they can speak in their Karabakh dialect and greet strangers like us.
Heavy, heavy, heavy people here.
Heavy.
Talk football.
Я вообще любил Манчестер Юнайтед, когда был тренером сэр Алекс Фергюсон. Когда играл Бекхэм, Сколс, Райан Гиггс.
And make music. The three young men in this group, Nova, Edgar, Armen and Gagik, now live with relatives or in rented flats. Amazingly, it's not been necessary to house any refugees in camps, but many are living in derelict houses in abandoned villages. And even for those in town, like Gagik, conditions are cramped and rents are high. Nothing in Armenia, he says, compares with what he left behind. Not even the sound of the traditional Armenian flute, the duduk, that he plays. So Gagik says that there was growing special reed, which was great for duduk. He says the sound was much more well-witty in a way. I started to wonder, can that be true? Or is it just nostalgia? So I went to visit Norai Gapoyan, one of Armenia's greatest duduk masters. This is him playing an instrument where the mouthpiece is a reed or hamish from Karabakh.
And this one is not from Artsakh, it is from Russia.
It is interesting because it seemed to me like it sounded a tiny bit different, but maybe that's mind games my head is playing, because I knew you were playing it with a different reed.
That bamboo, which comes from Artsakh, it was very good for playing, for sound, for everything. Bamboo, which we have in Armenia, also can be good, but they need to work long and hard to get good sound like that hamish, which was come from Artsakh. I think you can't feel that difference when you are listening. The difference is for musicians, I think. It is even hard to explain by Armenian, you know. You need to change your blowing system, your lip system.
You got to be a duduk player to understand.
The technicalities are complicated, but the message is clear. Like virtually every Armenian, Norair is sad about the loss of Karabakh. He used to go there to teach young people the duduk. Now he feels like something was taken away from him. But while some mourned, others started asking questions, trying to understand what had really happened.
Look, all Armenians in Karabakh, in Armenia, we've been living in a big, big lie.
Armen Babakhanyan is from the town of Shusha, known in Armenian as Shushi, which once had a mixed Azerbaijani and Armenian population. He is also a musician, but the duduk is too traditional for him. He plays rock. To be honest, that's more my style of music too. And he has an extraordinary memory from his childhood.
I was 11 years old. Shushi was liberated.
He means when Armenian forces first drove the Azerbaijanis out.
And I met with the guys in my age. We've been running in lots of abandoned buildings. We were kids. It was interesting what we could find. I found kids' toys on the streets, photos. And it was hurting me so bad because I was a kid and I knew there were lots of kids. They left those houses and toys and everything, you know. I was just feeling the same pain.
That was 1992. 28 years later, in another war, everything was reversed. Azerbaijanis drove the Armenians out and destroyed their houses, including Armen's, but he doesn't blame them. So you think what Azerbaijan now did to Armenians is exactly what Armenians did to Azerbaijan in the first one?
It's maybe not exactly, but it's equal. I see a lot of destroyed houses, old houses, beautiful houses, been destroyed by my people. So and I can't not see that. We may now paying price for our grandparents who did these mistakes. People are believing in lie. That we are the oldest nation, for example, that we have the biggest military.
So you think the initial Karabakh movement, independence movement, was a mistake?
Wrong. It was all wrong to me in the beginning, if you're asking me. It was broken my childhood, my generation. In the end, it's become the same what it was before the war. We have only broken childhoods, lost lives. They died just for nothing.
Arman also started his musical career in Bardak pub in Karabakh. But the Yerevan bar that he is performing in today isn't the new Bardak. His views are so unusual, he doesn't want to go there.
These faces make me feel so uncomfortable because I don't want to see these faces.
What's in that cocktail?
A special cocktail for Nina.
But Nina goes all the time.
Improvisation.
She's even brought school children here as a part of her charitable initiative to help groups of displaced Karabakh kids now scattered across Armenia keep in touch with one another.
And they had a nice party here and they danced a lot and they ate pizza. And so this is an opportunity for them all to reunite and pretend that it's all fine and they are doing the same things that they used to do before.
And what's the goal of that? Because, I mean, after all, they're not all together anymore and it's all not fine.
I think it's either raising them without dreams or raising them with a dream, and maybe it will not happen, but I cannot leave my children without a dream, without a purpose.
The purpose is simple: return to Karabakh. That's the message of this rally in Yerevan. Demand international guarantees for a safe return. But there is little hope in the crowd. Many are focused on immediate survival. Anjali and her family now live, it's 12 of them. They live in a two-bedroom apartment, three generations of their family. They are paying very high rent. So Anjali says that we cannot find jobs, they don't feel welcome here, they're thinking of migrating to Russia. As many others already have. Nationalism, like the slogans from the speakers, won't put dinner on the table. And I've met an old friend here who blames politicians like those on the platform for prolonging the conflict.
Talking about land and air like they have ethnicity, about stones, Armenian stones, Armenian land, Azerbaijani air, water. This is not the experience of people who lived there.
Yuri Manvelyan is a journalist who, like many other Armenians, grew up in Azerbaijan. Under Soviet rule, the two communities mostly lived peacefully. Ethnic tensions were swept under the rug. But when the Soviet Union began to collapse in the late 1980s, neighbor turned against neighbor. In Yuri's hometown, Armenians were killed on the streets for just being Armenian. His family fled to Yerevan. But instead of seeing all Azerbaijanis as enemies, he did the opposite. He learned the stories of Azerbaijanis who were killed and driven out from Armenia and published records documenting those crimes.
This is not like part of Armenian truth or Azerbaijani truth. We don't want to play these informational war games. Our institutions, even media institutions, sociologists in the independent Armenia, they developed with hiding the truth. So when Armenians are beaten in Azerbaijan, we call it genocide. When Azerbaijanis are beaten in Armenia, we call it historical justice or nothing happened. They just left.
I want to put that argument to my other old friend, Nina.
I think really in this conflict, the tragedy of it is that it became Karabakh is only Armenian and all Azerbaijanis were ethnically cleansed, let's say it out loud. And then when they got stronger and won militarily, all the Armenians had to go. So it's there is no compromise and no justice from either side, don't you think?
There is justice to history, and the history says Artsakh is Armenia.
Returning to Karabakh is her whole focus, but she's got conditions.
The terms that satisfies me is that Azerbaijanis get out of Artsakh and then our military stands there and then I go home. That's my terms.
I mean, that means another war. Do you want another war?
Armenia has never started war against Azerbaijan. It was always Azerbaijan starting war. Azerbaijan every single day on news says that there are high chances that they will start attack against Armenia.
İstese daha asan halledecek. İstemese de zorla halledecek.
This is Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev demanding that Armenia give his country a free road corridor through its territory. If it doesn't, he says he will take it by force. In response, Nina and other Armenian civilians are taking up military training run by volunteer organizations. Meanwhile, back at Bardak, the owner, Azad, is bursting with new plans. He's organizing jam sessions for aspiring musicians at the pub. But his heart is only half in it.
On the other hand, I think, what if we can return home soon? I will be divided between running a serious business here in Armenia and the pub in Artsakh, which would be ruined by then.
Would it ever be possible for Azad, Nina, and the other 100,000 Karabakh refugees to go home without another war? To be inspired by those remarkable mountains, to feel that exceptional Karabakh energy, to enjoy the special velvety sound of locally made duduks, without their own national anthem, their own army, their own international football team. Perhaps imagining that is just naive. And yet, I've been to Armenia many times in the last decade, and now I have a feeling that the number of people who believe the cycle of violence should stop is greater than ever. People like my old friend Yuri, who's seen the story from both sides.
It's not about love. It is about stop killing people, stop shooting. This is bad management. People who think they can start wars, they are bad managers. We should change them.
Thanks for listening. Assignment was presented by me, Grigor Atanasian, and produced by Tim Hill.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.